check out Rush Collectibles' awesome horror figures, including the first and only Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey 2 figures. For more information, go to rushfigures.com.
Remember, in the course of discussing movies, the host will spoil plots. You've been warned. Listen to their screams.
Greetings, ghouls and creeps, and welcome to Listen to Their Screams, a horror podcast that feels like you're chatting with friends. I am one of your friends, Dave. We're joined, as always, by your other friend, Ike. Ike, how are you?
Hey, I'm hanging in there, living the dream, living La Vida Loca.
Mm-hmm. Trying not to bake. It's a little hot out there. It's a little heat going around. Wish we'd get some rain here, break up the heat, but I'm... not going to sit here and be an old man and bitch about the weather.
Oh, man. Yeah, it is summertime, so I'm sure everyone's feeling that.
I guess. Well, all right. Well, today we have lots and lots to talk about, including two reviews. We're going to do a quick review of The Exorcism, the new Russell Crowe movie that's out. We weren't planning to do this, but we decided, hey, why not? We got a screener link for it, so we decided to throw it in. But the main event is Hunting for the Hag, which we will talk about later. But before we get there, and to all of our segments, Ike, did you watch anything this week?
You know, still watching Supernatural. And then, of course, last week I finished the... always forget what it's called. Pretty Little Liars, Original Sin. Mm-hmm. The second season of that finalized. So I finished that. It was pretty good. And then looking forward to another season of that. But otherwise, just still watching Supernatural. I believe we just finished season 7. So season 7 was the Leviathans. So mm-hmm. We're jumping set for into Purgatory. Season 8. Yeah, Purgatory. Yep.
Well, of course, I've also been watching Supernatural. I'm always watching Supernatural. I've watched a few movies here and there. Watched lots of baseball this week. I did watch the first season, almost the first two seasons of the series Slasher, which is on.
That's good.
It's around there. It's on Netflix, I think, primarily is where it's all at now. And yeah, it's pretty good. The first season was really good. I really liked the first season. Second season is it's getting there. It's still good, but I enjoyed the first a little more, but all kinds of supernatural people in the series, which is kind of cool. Ty Olson's in the second season. So, it's funny because I think his name is Benny in it too. It's weird. So it's like, so that's what I've been watching. Something else I did watch. Let's get to that.
Order up!
Here's one house special cheesy slasher. Enjoy!
It is our cheesy slasher of the week. And this week, we present to you a movie called Laid to Rest. Now, what we do here is just give you a little overview of the movie. We're not doing a review. We're just giving you a suggestion. Should you be in the mood for a cheesy slasher and don't know where to turn, hey, we're here for you. That's what we do. So we're talking about Laid to Rest, which was released in limited theatrical showings in March of 2009, and then straight to video after that on April 21st, 2009. It is now available to watch on the Roku channel. It was written and directed by Robert Hall, starring Bobby Sue Luther and Kevin Gage, and it is described as a young girl wakes up in a casket with a head injury and no memory of her identity. She quickly realizes she was abducted by a serial killer and she must fight to survive. There is a sequel, which came out in 2011, called Chrome Skull, Laid to Rest 2. I did watch that as well. And there was to be a third film they were working on and writing called Laid to Rest Exhumed, but it was canceled after Robert Hall passed away. So the second one's, it's okay. The first one's pretty fun. I actually enjoyed it. Chrome Skull is the the villain in the thing. He's pretty cool, pretty unique. The second movie goes a little more into Chrome Skull and what he is and everything else. It adds some, I don't know, kind of weird, unique layers to him. It's a cheesy, gory slasher, and it's a fun watch. And like I said, it's on the Roku channel. So if you're looking for something to watch, there you go. Ike, have you ever seen Laid to Rest?
I have not, it's hard to argue with Chrome Skull. So, yeah. You know, I'm sure it's great. It's also a 2000s slasher, and I do have a soft spot for, you know, the 2000s slasher. So I'll probably check this out sometime.
Yeah, it's a fun little watch. So there you go. Cheesy Slasher of the Week, Laid to Rest from 2009. Watch it now on the Roku channel. So let's move on then to our other weekly segment.
Stomp the Co-host.
And this week we're going to play Stomp the Co-host. That is our horror trivia game. Ike and I have identical horror trivia decks, and each time we play, we each randomly pull out two cards, which totals four questions, and we alternate asking each other these questions to determine who wins for this episode, or I guess win, lose, or draw. Currently, so far in 2024, Ike leads 3-2, so I'm hanging in there a little better so far than I did last year. But let's see what today brings. Do I fall further behind, or do I tie it up? So, Ike, are you ready to play Stump the Co-host?
I sure am.
All right, since you're leading in the series, I'm going to make you go first. Your first question: what 2014 film is based on a Hasbro board game?
Ouija.
That is Ouija. Where's my pen? All right, so I got one. All right, so go ahead and give me my first question.
All right. What 1999 movie involving a series of short films features performances by Steve Buscemi, Julianne Moore, and Christian Slater?
Interesting. 1999, is it?
Yep, 1990 movie, so 1990. And then it's a series of short films, so it sounds like it might be an anthology film.
From 1990. And it, this is probably going to kill me. I'm going to say, I'm going to say Creepshow 2.
That would be a negative. It is Tales from the Dark Side, the movie.
There you go. Okay. That makes sense. Damn. All right. Here is your second question. What 2009 film followed a family who adopted a girl named Esther who wasn't what she seemed? Damn it.
That would be Orphan.
That is Orphan. Man. All right. Go ahead. Give me my second question.
All right. What mythical creature did Hadley hope to see as a killer in the film Cabin in the Woods?
Oh, fuck. I hate this fucking movie.
If it helps at all, Hadley is one of like the administrator people who is like trying to like they're basically taking bets on like what monster is going to be there, and is like a specific monster.
I fucking watched this movie one time eons ago. Ah, fuck. All right, well, let's see. How about? I feel like it's fucking goofy, so why don't I just say how about Bigfoot?
Nope, it was the Merman.
Merman?
Yep, and then he ends up dying at the hands of the Merman at the end.
What the fucking kind of nonsense is that shit? Another reason I hate that movie. All right, here is your third question. What does the green liquid contain in the 1987 film Prince of Darkness?
The green liquid, does it contain a vampire?
No, it contains the essence of Satan.
Oh, yeah. I've never seen Prince of Darkness, so.
That's pretty bad.
That is pretty bad. Might want to keep that locked up. Mm-hmm. All right. I feel confident you'll get this one. What classic horror movie is set in Haddonfield, Illinois?
Well, would that be Halloween?
That sure would be.
Uh-oh. Here I go. If you miss this one, I have a chance to draw. Let's see. Your final question. An investigator ends up on a Scottish island where the inhabitants have an unhealthy obsession with sexuality in this 1973 film. Wow.
I don't think I have no clue. Let's go with Cannibal Holocaust.
No, it is The Wicker Man.
I guess I didn't know that. Well.
Here we go. I can pull out a draw. What did you say?
You could. I was just gonna say I feel like I've never seen The Wicker Man, but I know that there's like a remake of it too, isn't there? With like Cage.
So. I think so. Yeah.
But anyways,
I assume it's a remake of this. I'm not 100% sure on that, but. All right, here we go. My final question.
All right. What are the seven deadly sins featured in the movie Seven?
What? I got to name all seven of them?
You sure do.
Motherfuck, this ought to count for like 7 points. All right. Jesus Christ. Lust.
Yep.
Gluttony.
Yep.
Pride.
Yep.
Envy.
Yep.
Oh, Jesus. Ooh, Lord have mercy. Ooh. Three more. Damn it. What am I? Why am I shooting?
There's also an episode of Supernatural with the seven deadly sins.
Yeah, there is. I don't think we flat out see all seven per se. It's probably the four I just said that's why they all sprang to mind. Damn. I should know this shit. I should know this. It's actually also in that slasher show. That was what the first season was based on. Was the seven?
Oh, it was, yeah.
And then I can't freaking remember. Okay. I don't know. I cannot think of the other three. So I can see.
You gave me lust, envy, gluttony, and pride, and we are missing greed, sloth, and wrath.
Yeah, those weren't even hard ones. I should have known that.
I feel like envy was the one that I was like, I feel like I would not remember that one.
That's kind of hard when you're put on the spot to think of those.
It is.
No other questions. Do we have to come up with seven answers?
I know. That's pretty wild.
All right. So you win this round 2-1. Not a very good showing for either of us.
No. And,
you now have a year lead of 4-2. So there you go. That's where we stand. So let's take a break, and when we come back, we will do our news, birthdays, anniversaries, and all that good stuff, so stick around.
Make sure you subscribe to listen to their screams on your favorite podcast platform. Also, make sure you look us up on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, TikTok, and Slasher. All you have to do is look up Listen to Screams, that is Listen, the number 2 in Screams, and you can find us there. Also, make sure you go and buy yourself a Listen to Their Screams t-shirt. You can find all of our shirts at tinyurl.com/screamsshirts.
Spreading the news. And welcome back with the news. All right. So we're going to start us off with some news from the views. And we have a trailer for Nosferatu released in theaters the weekend of June 21st. So if you guys caught a movie or a horror movie of some sort over the last weekend, you probably potentially saw this. If not, folks could have checked it online on Monday, June 24th, so a couple days prior to this episode coming out. So the movie is set to release December 25th. You've heard that right? A Christmas horror movie with the vampire himself, Nosferatu.
Yeah, interesting day to release this, but kind of cool. I kind of like it. I dig it.
Yeah.
And the trailer was yeah, trailer was definitely creepy, and if I remember right, I don't think we gave us a, it did give us a super good look at Nosferatu, but I'm intrigued, and something I'll definitely be watching. So
yeah, I feel like you know, I've never seen the original like Nosferatu, like from like the 1920s or 10s or whatever the hell it's from. Mm-hmm. So I'll probably have to check that out sometime. And then probably also, I know there's a remake from the 70s that I heard is pretty good.
Yeah.
So I'll probably have to, maybe we can check those out before we see this one.
Yeah, the original's still pretty damn creepy.
You know, honestly, at some point I want to make a, cause I have my own YouTube channel that I also sometimes, but not in the last year, make content for. But did you know that Nosferatu has like a huge like backstory where like there's like all kinds of like occult stuff that happened in the original Nosferatu that was like real life stuff?
I did, yeah. I've heard about that. I haven't really like, you know, deep dove into it, but yeah.
I'll have to dive into that sometime because I've heard some pretty creepy stuff about the filming of that movie. So that might be something to talk about too.
Yeah.
We don't want to make the secret society is too scared of us. No, I'm just kidding. Mm-hmm.
Bring it on.
That's right. But yeah, we'll have to check this out in December and also check out the other films and everything else. Also, side note, I wonder, because Nosferatu came before Dracula.
Yeah, the original Nosferatu was in the 20s, because it's over 100 years old, and it is a silent film.
Right. So... And if I remember correctly, the vampire in Nosferatu isn't called Nosferatu. His name is Count Olaf, right? Is that right?
Yeah, they're pretty much one and the same, but yeah.
Are they? Okay.
Yeah.
Because I have like some like very brief information, but then I guess my other question is that Count, like Dracula was from a book, right? Was the book written after Nosferatu?
No, I don't believe so. The book was written before. Okay. I'm not 100% clear. I think Nosferatu was just more inspired by the, you know, vague vampire or whatever else. But no, Dracula, I believe, was written prior to. I don't know. I'm not 100% sure. I don't know if Nosferatu is actually derived from a written work or what, or if it was just written for the silent film. But it's definitely a different looking vampire. You know, it's much creepier, much more, I don't want to say deformed. I mean, deformed, I guess. Yeah, it's kind of it. So it's different. You know, it's not like the suave, Bela Lugosi looking vampire or, you know, or sparkly shit like in Twilight or anything like that. Yeah, this is, they're a little more, vicious, rabid, grotesque. You know, he's more of an animalistic type thing, but, yeah.
I gotcha.
Yeah. Also, it's a fun watch.
I figured it out that his name is Count Orlock, not Orlov.
Yeah, there you go.
Whatever the hell I said. But anyhow, before we get too far down that rabbit hole, because you are correct, though, it actually was derived from Dracula.
Yeah, I thought it was actually, yeah, in part of the book. The book is, like, it's like the movie's only part of the book, and then, you know, there's lots of different parts to the book. Right, because a lot of the book is based on letters written, you know, that's the formatting, the different things. And that one, I don't remember what that movie was that just came out last year, Voyage of the Demeter?
Demeter, yeah.
Yeah, that's based on a chapter in Dracula. So there's lots of that. But, you know, I mean, the original Dracula movie, the first Universal from the 30s, is actually only based on part of the Dracula book. Right. That's
really
it's yeah. After he arrives, on shore, and there's more prior to that, which is like the Voyage of the Demeter is part of the journey there and things like that. So there's, yeah, it's not all in the movie. So.
Interesting. I feel like there's a lot of lore here, and I'm a big fan of lore, so this might be something I need to dive into sometime.
there's a lot more to Dracula than just what was in that movie. That's why, you know, that's why there's been other Dracula movies, different takes and whatever else that they could be different because they're still pulling from the book, just different portions and stuff. So that, you know, they're not directly pulling from the exact same as Universal did. So, there's a lot of meat there that can be used for different things.
Gotcha.
And if I could be wrong, I believe Nosferatu, I don't know. He's from the book. I don't know exactly how it all fits in, but he's derived. I don't know if it's a direct, but it definitely inspiration there. But, yeah.
Well, that'll be something to, I am excited for the remake of it because obviously, you know, there's a lot, like you said, there's a lot of history there, but also from what I can understand, there's not a lot of Nosferatu related media other than just like the couple of movies that were made. So it's very cool that, you know, somebody said, yeah, let's just go ahead and make a movie. So,
yeah.
Anywho, before we get too far down that rabbit hole, because I can see the rabbit hole and I'm trying not to dive into it because there's a lot of stuff online, even just from a quick Google search, you know?
Yep.
Anywho, moving on. Another trailer for a different film, a favorite company of ours, A24, is working up something called Heretic. So you might be asking yourself, when can we see this? Well, first and foremost, the plot has not been revealed. The trailer is incredibly vague and incredibly weird. Mm-hmm. And the movie's set to release November 15th. So, it has some promise. This trailer, and Dave and I both watched it. It was odd. It was, but it was good.
Yeah, it was. I liked it. And the thing is, this A24, I would pretty much go watch a movie just blind, not knowing anything, and would still go and trust them to give me something I would like, probably. You know, Hugh Grant's in it, which is, man, he's great. Pretty much everything he does, and he seems pretty creepy in this movie. I don't know what to think after the trailer. I mean, is it a maze that is shown right at the end of the trailer? Is this literal? Is this literally what's happening in the movie? Is it? I don't know. There seems to be lots of at least from the trailer, and again, it could be way off what I'm thinking. There seems to be lots of religious overtones into the movie, you know, somewhat. I don't know. It's like I don't know if he's trying to, because there's the two girls who are going door to door, and I don't know what they are, you know, like what they're called, the Jesus of the Latter-day Saints or one of those type, I'm not sure which denomination, something like that, right, where they're going door to door to try to spread the good news. And it's almost like he's doing this to them, trying to like test their faith is what the vibe I got almost. I don't know. But it is intriguing. It looks very interesting. And I'm anxious to see it.
Me too. And like you said, I'm very curious to know if like what is happening is actually real or if it's like a drug trip or something like that. So, you know, for people who want to check it out, the trailer is out there. It is readily available. So, you know, mm-hmm. Check it out. Yeah, I guess we'll see on November 15th.
Yep.
All right. And this is actually this nice little bit of news. I did not know that they were doing this. So I saw it and I was like, okay, I'd read that. But a novelization of Terrifier 2 from Titan Books is scheduled to be released on October 29th. So obviously, you know, novelizations are kind of like a thing of the past. I feel like a lot of times, you know, especially like in the 90s, 2000s, you know, movie novelizations were like a huge thing. You know, a movie would come out, somebody would write a book, a novel about the movie, basically retelling the events, maybe with a little bit more detail here and there, maybe some stuff that we didn't see. You know, even like horror movies in general sometimes get that, you know, that treatment. So, I'm curious. I'm very curious.
Yeah. No, movie novelizations have been a big thing all the way back into the 60s and 70s even. But I remember, you know, coming out of the 70s into the 80s as a kid, they were huge. And a lot of the novelizations were written based on scripts. But, you know, so that the novelization was out virtually at the same time the film came out. But you would get, there would be differences, obviously, because maybe, you know, the script may have changed. Scenes may have got cut from the movie. So lots of times in the novelizations, you were getting some different stuff and some bonus things. I believe I can't remember which one. I don't know which Friday the 13th it is. I cannot remember. But there was one where there was something that was going to be in the film that got cut out, but it was in the novelization where we actually see just for a moment at the end of the movie, we see Jason's father. And,
really?
And you find out he's the one that's paying for why Jason always has a headstone and things like that, right? It's him paying for this, and that's why it's always there. And they were going to, the plan was to do something with that. It was in the script, I think, some of the notes, different things. So it made the novelization, I'm pretty sure, but then they cut it from the movie. So, you know, I think, you know, there was even storyboard drawings out there where they were planning to use it. But anyway, so you often got things like that in the novelizations because, you know, back in the day, because of much slower turnaround than there is now, right? Yeah. They couldn't wait till the movie because by the time you got the novelization out, people would have forgotten and moved on to the next thing. So they were going off of early scripts and everything else to try to get it done and out there when the movie released. So you got lots of cool stuff and a lot of deleted scenes from the movie that would be novelized and stuff like that. So circling back around to Terrifier 2, I'm loving it, man. I hope they make it look old school. You know, kind of that mass market paperback look, you know, like they used to do and stuff like that. You know, I want it to be, my gut kind of feels it. And this is like in a partnership that Titan Books and them have done. So there's going to be more. I'm assuming we'll see a Terrifier 3 novelization. Who knows? Maybe they'll go back and do the first one. But it's very, very cool. And, but Terrifier, you know, and Bloody Disgusting and their part in the production and different things, they all tap into that retro vibe, right? I mean, we have a little bit of news we'll talk about with Walmart's and that going on that, do you want to talk about that real quick? Cause it kind of ties to a thought I had.
Yeah, absolutely.
That, you know, everybody online, I mean, I'm sure everybody knows, right? That there's been a section of horror merchandising that's been hitting Walmart's, right? That's starting to show up, Bloody Disgusting and all that, Screambox and all have a very big presence in it, but there's some other stuff too. But part of it is, you know, Terrifier's got some stuff in there, right? And one thing is a Terrifier 2 VHS, yes. Which is, it's very cool, very retro, right? VHS are a big thing, for collectors and particularly in horror, right? Because it's nostalgic for horror movies. But it's wild to think there is, going to be a VHS sold in a Walmart. It's stuff like that. So anyway, to circle back around to the novelization, I have a feeling the novelization will harken back to the good old days of this. You know, we might get some, you know, cool cover art on it that looks kind of old school. I mean, it's just exciting. It's a fun thought to get something like this. And, I'm a book guy, so I hope we get much more of this in the future from movies.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, lately I've been trying to, you know, do more reading and, everything else. And, you know, I've found a pretty vast, I would say, horror market for books. And, I feel like a Terrifier novelization will just be so fantastic. I feel pretty confident that we'll probably get some behind the scenes stuff, maybe some, look into like, you know, maybe why Art the Clown does what he does. You know what I mean? Like maybe some sort of like vague justification or, you know, some internal monologue or something like that, that he has. I don't know. I'm very curious because they could go a lot of directions with the novelization, whether it just be a true to form, like, you know, shot for shot, But I feel like they'll go deeper than that. I feel like it's going to be a little bit more of a deep cut with, like, you know, some behind the scenes stuff maybe. And like you said, I feel confident that Terrifier 3 will get a novelization because I feel like they're lining this up to, you know, Terrifier 2 novelization right around the same time, you know, that Terrifier 3 is coming out to kind of build that hype. So 3 will probably come out in the new year. And then, like you said, I think they could do a 1, at least in my brain, like they need to make a first one so that way I can have all 3.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if they do 2 and 3, they have to do the first one or else.
Exactly.
I will go berserk, but, same. Yeah, I mean, no matter how they approach it, there could still be more depth added because there's watching a movie, you sometimes as a viewer, because of your perspective, can miss things or interpret things differently than maybe the creator thought. And that's not a bad thing or anything else, but it's just something different. But if you see it in a written word, it can completely lead you a different way, right? I mean, then what do you watched it based on the words and what they're, you know, because if they have to write what you're supposed to see, there's more context they can add to things that could completely give a whole new layer to things. Even if it is just a novelization straight up of the movie, it could still add a little depth to it that, you know, that may have been overlooked.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I think this is a perfect time to say, everybody, make sure you are following us on social media, because as soon as this stuff goes live, as soon as we see, you know, pre-sales for the book going live, we're going to report on it. You know, and also continue to support these, you know, big, these small companies, you know, who are partnering. You know, the Terrifier team is, you know, it's a family team, basically. You know, for everything that I've heard is that they are a close-knit group of people who are, you know, tirelessly working on multiple projects, trying to get stuff put out. So make sure we support them. You know, buying this book directly supports, you know, Damian Leone and his crew for making future projects. So,
And the fact of the matter is, if they put out a Terrifier 2 novelization and it sells just through the roof, other companies are going to look at it and be like, oh, okay, we can make a few bucks off this, you know, and so, you know, we could get more novelizations. You know, that's success opens lots of people's eyes to this and realize that there's a market for it. And I'm all about it because, like I said, I'm a book guy. So I want to see more of this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, all right. Before we get too far down that rabbit hole, I swear, we have two other pieces of news. First things first, Robert Englund and John Carpenter are both getting Hollywood Walk of Fame stars. So they are part of the 2025 group, so they will get their stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Dave, did you know that that is not like something that people just get like chosen to do? Like they have to pay for their own star. Did you know that?
I thought I'd heard that, but yeah, it's still a cool thing.
It is. Well, and I do not mean that to diminish the nature of the star, because I would venture to guess that most of the people there probably deserve their stars. It's just, when the whole thing was Zac Efron got a star, around the time that, Iron Claw came out, and I saw some like article about like how there's a whole process to it. You do have to get approved for it, but like, basically, you have to purchase it, and then you have to be, you know, you get put into a round of people, like you said, the 2025 group. There's like a group of people that are guest stars, so it's interesting. It's interesting how they do that. It's curious. Hollywood's a curious place.
It is, but those two deserve all the recognition in the world for in any way.
Absolutely. But in any case, moving on to our last little bit of news, this is unfortunately a sad reporting for people who maybe have not heard this yet. But Donald Sutherland, known for his roles in Don't Look Now, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and the Hunger Games franchise, as many other films, did pass away on June 20th at the age of 88. That's a long life to live. He has an incredible library of just great films that he done. And he was, you know, a lot of people can talk, you know, crap about the Hunger Games movies, but his role as President Snow, I mean, it is a masterclass on being a classic villain, let me tell you.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, he stands out in everything he did. I mean, it's just, you know, he was truly a master of his art.
He truly was. Truly was. May he rest in peace, and may the odds be ever in his favor. So, moving on to the birthdays, the other end of the spectrum, talking about birth and not death. June 27th, 1999, Chandler Riggs. I think that's one of the youngest birthdays that we've had on the podcast. But yeah, Chandler Riggs, love him. Great guy. I've met him before when he was like younger. Obviously his role as Carl is a little, people are back and forth. There's either people who love Carl or people who hated Carl.
Yeah.
Carl. But yeah, happy birthday, Chandler.
Yeah. Go get him, Chandler.
If I remember correctly, you, me, and Monica have a picture with Chandler somewhere from Cincinnati Comic Expo, I think it was.
Yeah, it's on my phone.
Yeah, that was years ago.
Yeah, maybe we'll post that on his birthday. It was a long time ago.
It was a very long time ago. Good Lord. All right. Moving on to June 28th, 1979, Felicia Day, known for her roles in Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Supernatural. She plays Charlie Bradbury, is that right?
Yep, she plays Charlie. And Otherworld Charlie. And she's in all kinds. She's in X-Files. Buffy. And she's just done so many things. And, of course, I mean, I first knew her from The Guild, her little online thing she did about about play gaming. It was just a great little series. It's so funny. And she's just she's a pretty cool person.
Yeah, absolutely. And weirdly enough, I just recently watched the episode of Supernatural where they first introduced Charlie.
It's a great episode.
It is, because she works for Dick Roman, who is the head Leviathan. She works for his company. So, like, I saw her and I'm like, oh, hey. Weirdly enough, there she is.
I love Felicia Day. She's great.
She is. I really wish they didn't kill Charlie in Supernatural, but I digress.
Lots of people wish that.
Gotta love it. Well, July 1st, 1952, we're jumping back to Dan Aykroyd, known for, Ghostbusters and just being absolutely fucking insane. I love Dan Aykroyd. And I think it's great that, like, he decided just to lose his shit after he was really popular. So, like, it's kind of, like, cool that he's crazy. But have you seen the Crystal Skull vodka that he does?
Yeah, I want one. The liquor store here has it. And it's like, I want it just for that bottle. Shaped like, it's so cool. But, not only was Aykroyd in Ghostbusters, but he was in Blues Brothers, which I absolutely love. And, you know, of course, one of the original Saturday Night Live guys, it was so funny on there. But, he's, kind of dove pretty deep into the UFO world now. And, while I have my opinions on that and everything else, but he's kind of all over the place with that stuff. Hey, whatever. More power to him. So be it.
Well, you know, hey, if he wants to be crazy, he can be crazy. He's got the money to be crazy. So, although I will say, I really like his, like, I don't mean this way it's going to sound, but, like, I feel like they wrote the parts in, like, the more recent Ghostbusters movies specifically for crazy Dan Aykroyd, because he's, like, a crazy guy who runs, like, a pawn shop for, like weird stuff. So, like, it just makes perfect sense.
Well, he has that bookstore in Raise a Cult. He has that Ghostbusters too.
Right. Yeah.
Back in the days. I mean, way back, the original sequel though. I mean, either that or they just wrote it. He's like, you know what? I'm going to play this crazy, or that's just him, right? That's just him playing it. Whatever it may be, it works for him. And, pretty funny dude.
He is. He's a humble dude, though. That's what I hear. He's humble but crazy. Two very good qualities.
Yeah.
I kid. I would love to meet Dan Aykroyd. Like, on a serious side note, I would love to meet Dan Aykroyd just to, like, And I'd want him to sign, like, a Crystal Skull vodka bottle. Like, absolutely. Anywho. He probably doesn't do conventions, does he? I would bet money he probably doesn't.
I don't know. I've never seen his name pop up. I'm sure he has done them, but I don't know anymore. Probably, I don't know. Probably not. I mean, he's a pretty busy guy these days with everything going on. So he's
between being insane and Crystal Skull vodka. It's a pretty busy life.
He's got the new Ghostbusters movies. He's got the vodka. He's got a million and one UFO and conspiracy shows to appear on and whatever else. I mean, I'm sure he does probably a slew of podcast interviews on it. And I don't know. I mean, just, I'm sure he's probably too busy for the conventions, unless he's doing like a MUFON convention or something like that, right. A UFO organization. I don't know. And I'm not knocking any of it. Don't trust me. I'm not knocking any of that, but, I don't know. Hey, Dan, you can come on our show and we'll talk a little about Ghostbusters. You can just ramble and talk about whatever you want, buddy.
Yeah, absolutely. We're here for it.
Bring your harmonica and just play us a few bars of blues while you're at it.
Good Lord. Anywho, moving on. July 3rd, 1973. Patrick Wilson, known for Insidious and the Conjuring franchises, also known for having the voice of an angel. I always say it every time I talk about him.
I figured you were throwing that in there.
But come on, have you heard the song that he did with Ghost?
I have.
Oh, that's right. It's at the end of the movie. Don't mind me.
I have.
Oh, I love him. I love Patrick Wilson. Yeah, Patrick, right. If you want to come on the show, that's cool too. Serenade me.
While we're at it, Felicia, Chandler, you want to come on? I mean,
literally anybody.
We'll talk to whatever. Let's get all four of you. That'd be a hell of a roundtable discussion. I don't know what the hell we'd talk about, but
that's a nightmare blunt rotation right there. Chandler Riggs, Felicia Day.
We would figure something out. I mean, I'd listen to a show. It's like, all right, our guests today, all in a roundtable discussion, are Chandler Riggs, Felicia Day, Dan Aykroyd, and Patrick Wilson. I'd be like, what? It's like, what the hell do all those people have in common?
They're human beings. Yeah. Well, Dan Aykroyd may contest that fact, but. I can't.
Wow, it'd be intriguing, but
that would be somebody.
Dory's always open.
That's right.
Let's make some magic, fellas.
All right, before we get too far away from the off the rails here, I swear, we're doing that a lot today. It happens, I guess. But moving on to upcoming movie anniversaries. June 27, 2003, 28 Days Later. Obviously, we both love 28 Days Later, and we are getting another 28 Days film. I think they called it 28 Years Later, so good looking out on that one. Be here pretty soon, probably in the next year or two, if I remember correctly.
That's been a while since I've seen this movie, though. That's one of those movies that it popped up in this, and I was like, man, I haven't watched that in a while. That's one I really need to rewatch. And then I'll probably forget about it.
I've seen 28 Days Later not super long ago, but it has been a very long time since I've seen 28 Weeks Later.
Well, me too. I've probably only seen that one once.
I think so, same. I think I would say the same.
But if there's a new one coming, there's a new one coming, then I'll watch them all prior to that, so.
I also heard that there was a comic book for 28 Days Later.
Yes, there was. There absolutely definitely was, because when I owned the comic shop that I had it, we had them in there at that time.
It's so wild, and this is another kind of thing on the same process, is that a lot of horror films get comic book adaptations. Like, there's like a whole slew of Halloween comic book adaptations. Like, there's even one where like Laurie Strode becomes like a serial killer. Like, it's mm-hmm. there's all kinds of cool shit like that. A lot of crossovers that like you would never imagine. Like, what was the one? It was like Ash versus Freddy versus Jason.
I think Ash is, there's been an Ash versus about everybody. And, true. But there's a lot of cross section between comic fans and horror fans, and case in point us. And true. so And you know, horror fans are known, like we've said, horror fans typically like, they, you know, like books, like reading, like cool artwork, and are collectors. So if you throw all that together in a comic book and you're giving them something that's wacky and they're like, you know, whatever, you know, it's like, holy fuck, it's Ash versus Bugs Bunny. I gotta have it. You know, that's what, yeah.
Ash versus Bugs Bunny. Hell yeah. I'd watch that shit.
Yeah, I'd watch those cartoons. Ash might be in trouble.
He might be, honestly. Bugs Bunny's got the cartoon power, dude. That shit ain't something. That, you don't mess with your cartoon power.
I mean, he caused Elmer Fudd to shoot himself an awful lot.
Oh, man. Anywho, again, another rabbit hole. It always happens.
No pun intended. But,
no pun intended there. You don't want to mess with his rabbit. You don't want to mess with his rabbit hole. You go down there, dynamite and shit. Oh, man. Yeah,
I don't know where Bugs gets it all, but...
I know. Where does he get all this shit? I don't know.
He's crafty.
He is. Also, circling back to Supernatural, there's like a whole episode about like weird shit like that where...
Yeah,
like, that... Like Roadrunner stuff. And
the fun episode.
It is a good episode. But, like anywho. July 1st, 2016, The Purge election year. I believe this is the third film in the franchise, so it was Purge, Purge Anarchy, and then Purge Election Year. I actually quite like this one. It's not my favorite, but it's up there in terms of sequels. It's pretty solid, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any problem with any of the Purge movies. I think they've all got their appeal. And you know, I think the Purge is a little bit of an underrated franchise. You don't hear a lot about it, but it's a pretty cool concept that seems to work in each movie, and I dig it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I heard that they're going to make more, so we'll see. But July 2nd, 1986, Psycho 3. You know, I've seen the original Psycho. Dave has told me to watch the second Psycho. And I knew there was a third one, but I have not seen this one either.
Yeah, you got to watch it too.
We'll have to give it the old checkaroo. Yeah, I mean, I'm open to it. I'll give it a shot, see what happens, you know.
Just like you got to watch some of those Omen sequels.
Yeah, eventually I'll sit down sometime, bite the bullet, and like watch a bunch of sequels.
Yeah, Sam Neill's in one of the Omen sequels. I think the
really.
Yeah, I think it's a third one. Third. Yeah. He plays him as an adult.
Gotcha. Okay. Check that out sometime. Well, last but not least, July 22nd, 2021, Fear Street Part 1, 1994. I'm a huge fan of the Fear Street movies. In fact, they're coming out with another one, right? It's Fear Street, mm-hmm. like Prom Queen, I think it's called,
mm-hmm.
something like that. But I love the Fear Street movies, the three movies that they released during like 2021 during COVID. Honestly, so freaking good. Yeah. You know, it combined like it was like Goosebumps for adults. You know what I mean? Which is kind of what Fear Street was. Fear Street is supposed to be more mature than like Goosebumps was. Yeah, it was super spooky, super violent, bloody, gory, all kinds of good shit. There's three of them and they're all on Netflix still. So good shit.
Yeah. Yeah. They're fun. They have a very cool kind of retro-y vibe to them. You know, and everything. They're a lot of fun. I think that's a franchise I think they could do a lot with. I mean, there's, you know, pretty much anywhere they can go with it for the most part.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. Same thing with like Goosebumps and stuff like that. So, you know,
yep.
Good stuff. All right. We finally made it to the last segment here for upcoming releases. Starting us off very strong. Quiet Place Day One hits theaters on June 28th. The movie follows a woman named Sam during the early stages of an invasion in New York City by alien creatures with ultrasonic hearing. And we are going to be reviewing this next episode. Of course, for people who are not aware or have been living under a rock, this is the third of the Quiet Place movies. There are two Quiet Place movies so far that are one cohesive story that follows the story of a family. And this one is supposed to be sort of like a prequel, like it says, back to the first beginning of everything. You know, and honestly, I'm very excited for this because when I first watched the Quiet Place movie, I had so many questions, like, basically, how did people even survive the initial onslaught? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, how did people figure out that they can hear really good and everything else? So, that's one of the biggest questions I've had. And I feel like they literally made this movie because they wanted to answer people's questions. Like, that's how it feels. So, I'm very pumped for it. I'm very excited to get some more details about, like, how the aliens got here, you know, the military's response to the aliens. There's so much cool stuff I feel like we're going to see in this movie.
Yeah. I mean, there's, yeah, lots they could do with it. And, yeah, it'll be fun. It's, you know, prequels are often tricky, right? But, I feel like this is more one where they had what would happen in this movie in mind when they made the first one already. I think they had a pretty good idea of how they got to that point for that first movie that came out. And this is not, you know, one of those cases where you're taking a movie and just going back and just trying to come up with the backstory to get there. I have a feeling there was a plan already, some ideals that they're just now fleshing out. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Very, very awesome. So check us out next week. We'll have our official review of that. But the next item on our list, The Watchers, which we already reviewed, is going to be released on video on demand on June 28th and will be on physical media August 27th. You know, we give generally favorable reviews. Feel free to check out the full review in our archive. But, you know, it's very cool. Like we always say, the basically the pipeline from, you know, being on the silver screen, if you will, to the home screen, that pipeline has become so much faster because of COVID. So, you know, we always talk about it when things like this pop up. It's just, I feel like this movie just came into theaters, so it's so cool that people are going to be able to watch it at home very soon.
Yeah. I mean, it's still in theaters. This is one of those theater at home deals, which they do, most of them are doing now, right? Because that early digital release, video on demand, usually it costs a little more than the normal video on demand price. But, you know, to some people, that's fine, right? I mean, if you're taking two or three people to a movie, it's probably, you know, it's probably even cheaper than that. If you prefer to wait. So, yeah, it's pretty cool that it's like, there's such a variance of things, now with the way this works that however you want to watch a movie, if you like to go to the theater, if you prefer to watch at home, whatever it might be, your needs are pretty much met, and typically you don't have to wait too long for it. So,
yeah, very awesome. So, if you didn't check it in theaters, check it on video on demand. All right, next, the adaptation of the Stephen King story The Monkey is set to be released in theaters on February 21st, 2025. The movie is produced by James Wan and is described as when twin brothers Bill and Hal find their father's old monkey toy in the attic, a series of gruesome deaths start. The siblings decide to throw the toy away and move on with their lives, growing apart over the years. Never heard of this book, but, you know, hey, or the story by Stephen King, I should say. But hey, I'll watch anything, give it a try. Sounds interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's Stephen King. It's gonna have a chance. I'm wondering if the monkey's one of those old, you know, with the symbols monkeys, you know, with the claps the symbols together like you always see. Cause those things have, like, in what was it, Monkey Shines and everything like that. It's been in so many movies, and there's something very creepy about that toy. And, I think it's that the whole thing that typically when it's in a movie, it's sitting there and then at a tense moment, it starts doing that, you know, the banging the little symbol. So I'm wondering if that's what the toy is, but whatever the case may be, it sounds interesting, right? It's like they get rid of the toy and then I'm curious to see where how that winds up, right? They get rid of the toy and they grow apart or whatever. It's like, how does that all happen? Is the toy holding them together? So I'm curious to see, what happens. So I'll give it a watch.
That's right. Stephen King, give it a watch. All right. Last but not least, in addition to Megan 2.0 coming to theaters June 27th, 2025, the Megan universe will have a spin-off movie to expand upon its great, great background. The movie will be titled Soulmate. That's S-O-U-L-M, the number 8, T-E. In the movie, a man acquires an artificially intelligent android to cope with the loss of his recently deceased wife. In an attempt to create a truly sentient partner, he inadvertently turns a harmless love bot into a deadly soulmate. It is currently scheduled to be released in theaters on January 2nd, 2026. You know, that's great. I mean, it feels like we're combining, like, the movie Her that, like, Joaquin Phoenix was in, like, the weird AI, and we're combining it with, like, the Terminator. So, yeah, I mean, I'll watch it. I'll give it a shot. You know, if it's the same people who made Megan, you know, and assuming Megan 2 is pretty decent, yeah, I'll give it a shot. I'll give it a chance. It's just, I feel like this might be retreading old ground, so we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm not opposed to it, and I'm hopeful, right? It's a vague description. I'm hoping there's some uniqueness to it that makes it different. But if you're going to spin out, right, of Megan, and you're going to develop this universe with these different kinds of movies, with these different kinds of, right, does it not have to pay off at some point with, like, a technology assemble, big war thing with, like, Megan and the love bot from Soulmate Love Bot and all these other things combining together to form this super villain team? I mean, come on. It just, at some point, it has to happen.
Yeah. I'm like waiting for them to be like, oh yeah, this is a, this is like the prequel to like the Terminator or something like that.
Yeah. Who knows? But, there's lots of things they can do with, you know, technology based horror. I mean, this, especially in this day and age, right? Cause technology, shit, does so much now. I mean, it's virtually whatever, you know, it's so much it does and so much it can do. Yeah, I mean, with the right ideals, they could really expand this universe and do lots of different things. As long as things are unique. I mean, even the description of this, it's like, is it? Doesn't even sound that different than the basis for Megan, even. I mean, it's like, you know, I mean, a little bit, but right, it's still the, I don't know, right? Someone lost something. There's a artificially intelligent thing kind of taking that place. So it's like, yeah. But, you know, I'm hopeful that there's something more. I mean, it's a vague description, like we said. And hopefully there's a lot more to it that where it doesn't just feel like Megan for grown-ups.
Right. That's what I was going to say. I'm curious how they'll do it. But like you said, you don't want it to be a rehashing of the movie that it's literally spinning off of. So
yeah,
we'll see. We'll see what happens. But all right. I think that pretty much ends all of our news, birthdays, anniversaries, and releases. So, there was a lot there, a lot of meat, a lot of substance. So,
yeah.
Take a deep breath, take a drink of water, and when we come back, folks, we will have our official review of not only The Exorcism, but Hunting for the Hag. Stick around.
This is Wrestling Nostalgia, the podcast that dives into wrestling history. Hey, wrestling fans, I'm Dave Dynasty. And if you enjoy podcasts that are knowledgeable and history-driven, then Wrestling Nostalgia is for you. With great guests and fun interviews, there are over 200 episodes in our archives. We chat with several first-time guests and often cover topics not discussed on other podcasts. Look up Wrestling Nostalgia on your favorite podcast platform and visit all of our links at linktree.com/wrasslepod. That is linktr.ee/RASSLEPOD. And remember, wherever you go, whatever you do, be good, be safe, and keep on growing.
All right. Well, let's get through these reviews. We've got two of them. Let's start with The Exorcism. Written by M.A. Fortin and Joshua John Miller, directed by Joshua John Miller. The movie is starring Russell Crowe, Ryan Simpkins, and Adam Goldberg. It was released in theaters on June 21st, and the movie grossed $2,439,000 domestically, good for number 7 on opening weekend. Now, when we kind of preview this movie, I had, you know, I won't say concerns, but right, there was a, it's like, okay, so it's another Exorcism movie with Russell Crowe in it. It's like, huh. But it was, this was very, very different. This was not the same old thing. He is not a priest in this. He is merely playing a priest as an actor, in a movie And but he has demons, personal demons, right? He was an alcoholic. And it pretty much cost him his career. This was kind of his comeback. He had a daughter who was estranged, who got kicked out of college, I think is what they were saying. So she had to come back and live with him. So they were trying to rebuild their relationship. And then this, you know, the possession happened. Again, I'm not going to give a lot of spoilers on this because I think people give it a watch. But if anybody has trepidation that this is just going to be the last Exorcist or last, was that what it's called? Last Exorcist? All over again.
Pope's Exorcist.
Pope's Exorcist. Yeah, that's it. Wasn't there a Last Exorcist too? Maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah, there was. There's a Last Exorcism, which is a found footage film.
Oh, there you go. So they're just exercising everything out there. And so it's like if you're thinking it's the Pope's Exorcist all over, no, it's nothing like that. I know it's misleading if you see the posters, you see him in it and everything, and you think it is, but it's very, very different. And it was a pretty good watch, right? It was not that same retread Catholic Church exorcism blah 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 thing that you see, and that has to have a dose of originality to mix it up. This was again a completely different angle. Playing the priest in the movie within the movie was pretty clever. I mean, I kind of like it. And but again, you know, Russell Crowe he's such a good actor, right? He's so believable in it. You really believe he's having these struggles, you know, and you really feel for him and his daughter as they're trying to reestablish a relationship. And it's just you know, it was a pretty good film. Now, as far as I would very loosely call this horror because it had a little bit in it. Yes, there was some parts that were horror-esque, but it didn't have a lot of the qualities of horror, right? The demon part, the demon possession part was not the overlying aspect of this. It was not the biggest part of this. There wasn't a whole lot of scares. There wasn't a whole lot of kills. There were some, but not so much that this was loosely horror adjacent. It's a good film, but if you're hoping for a really strong paranormal possession type film, no, this is not it. This is really more of a damaged human rebuilding themselves with a little bit of possession on the side. It's really not even, to me at least, when I watch it, the possession part wasn't even really the A story of it. And it was there. It does play into it, but that's not the biggest part of the movie. So, I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily describe this as a quote unquote horror movie per se. So if that's your thing, if you really, you know, want the horror in your possession movies, this would probably be a pass for you. But you know, if you've got a wide range, it's still a decent little film. So, I know we're trying to keep these a little briefer because of time, but do you have anything you want to add?
Yeah, you know, like you said, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't really anything new. You know, if you've seen Russell Crowe in one possession movie, you've seen him in all of them. And it's just weird that, you know, he played, you know, a priest and the Pope's Exorcist, and then turns around and plays an actor in a film who is also playing a priest. So, you know, there were some cool moments. I feel like they saved all the cool moments for like the last like 20 minutes of the film. It wasn't the worst movie I've ever seen, but it definitely wasn't like the best. I think the biggest thing for me is that when I watched this movie, kind of like Dave said, it wasn't a standard possession horror film. It very much, in my opinion, relies on a sort of subtext, you know, narrative of family turmoil and healing and addiction and everything else. So there's a lot going on in this movie, horror being sort of at the bottom of that list of things that are going on. So wasn't really scary, but had a decent, you know, story and message to it. Like you said, if you like Russell Crowe, you know, give it a watch. Might as well. I prefer The Pope's Exorcist myself. I like that movie a lot. I don't think this holds up to The Pope's Exorcist in terms of scary Russell Crowe movies, but take it for what you will.
No, again, I don't. I wouldn't define this as a horror movie, so I don't think there's much more for us to say about it. Let's give it a quick rating before we move on to the main event. You know, like I said, it was an okay movie, but it was. I have to say, overall, it for me, from what I wanted, it was disappointing. This, you know, I wasn't going in to see this. This is not what I was hoping for. I don't mind the human side of the story within the movie. It can work. But this is not the way I wanted it. So, you know, it probably would not be a movie that I'd probably ever rewatch. So, I'm going to ding it here a little bit. I'm going to give it a 2 out of 5 because again, it was an okay film. But it wasn't what I would necessarily even call highly enjoyable for me. It's just not what I'm wanting, not what I was looking for, not what I was hoping for. And in retrospect, it's like, I would have probably passed on it if I had known a little more. So 2 out of 5 for me. Ike, what are you giving it?
Yeah, I'm not giving it much more. I'm giving it a 2.5 out of 5. You know, there were some redeeming qualities. The movie itself was relatively enjoyable, but it definitely was not what I was expecting or anticipating from a movie of this nature. So 2.5 out of 5, 2.5 out of 5, however you want to say it. So that'll do me.
All right. Well, let's move on then to the other movie, the movie we had originally planned to do, Hunting for the Hag. This movie is written by Paul A. Brooks and Sierra Renfro, directed by Paul A. Brooks, starring Daniel Roebuck, Jasmine Williams, Alexa Maris, Sierra Renfro, and many others. The movie was released to video on demand on April 2nd. We have to give a shout out and a thank you to Paul A. Brooks, the writer and director, who reached out to us and said, hey, I got this movie. Maybe you ought to check it out. And I looked at it, thought, hey, it's pretty cool. And he says, cool, let me send you a screener link. And I was like, okay. So he sent us a screener link. I gave it a watch. I said, hey, we really ought to review this movie. Because I got to say, I thought it was a fun movie. I really enjoyed Hunting for the Hag. And I have to say, it what was a pretty good way. It wasn't really what I expected. It went a completely different route that I thought, but I enjoyed, because again, I'm not gonna give a whole lot of direct spoilers, but I will say, obviously you're hunting for the hag, right? There's a witch, and they're going to go hunt for this witch. And we've talked some movies like this recently with, you know, Frogman and things like that, right? It's kind of the nature, that there's this group of friends and, you know, one's a very strong believer in this kind of thing. One is a skeptic, but she's the one that's doing the project, for school or for something. I can't remember, but anyway, she's the one doing the film though. She's a skeptic, but she does have a curiosity about it. The other girl was just tagging along for free beer and to have a good time. Again, they nicely established characteristics of the characters. We talked to Anthony Cousins about that with Frogman. I like that with this kind of movie, right? Because so many times you have a movie like this, the characters are just interchangeable, right? They're just, you have trouble keeping track of who is who. But this one I liked, right? The girls each had a distinct personality about them within the film, which you found out more about as the movie went on. But what you think is just going to be kind of this witch movie, right? Hunting for this witch, kind of a supernaturally thing, you know, whatever going on, takes a whole different sidebar. And it turns into this really creepy ass for the meat of the movie, where they're kidnapped and they're by these really grotesque guys. These guys made the witch look nice. They were just horrible humans, right? In every sense of the way. But it really did add a lot of character to the movie, a lot of development to these characters, added a lot of depth with these guys because, the one knew the one girl who was from the area. They picked up on where they were by social media because of that connection. So it added a lot to the movie to explain a lot of things. They didn't leave a lot of holes. And why this was happening per se, right? These guys were just jackass guys, who thought they could do what they want and get away with it. And, you know, we're out to do some really disgusting things. But, you know, and the witch does end up coming into it, coming back into it. It's, you know, pretty cool. But again, I didn't expect this whole section with these guys, even when they showed up and, what happened with the fourth friend, which I'm not going to give that all away. I still didn't think it was going to go to that route, right? I thought, well, here's just some more fodder for the witch, right? You know, that's what was happening here. But I thought it was pretty clever and it was different. It gave it a different feel than a lot of movies like this, because there are a lot of movies like this. But what they did with these guys, to me, gave it a unique little angle and added a layer to it that was pretty, pretty cool and made it really enjoyable for me. Made you root for these girls even more, harder to survive, because, you know, not only was there this looming, the hag, the witch out there, what's going to happen with that? But then there's this whole dimension. So you really, really get behind them and root for them. So I've rambled a little bit. Tell me some of your thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, like you said, you know, going into this movie, you know, I kind of figured it would be like a found footage type film. And it was, in part. There is a pretty unique sort of, I would say it was a clever, not only a clever plot device, because there is a point in the movie where it does switch from found footage to basically like an actual film, you know, for a brief moment. And they do it on purpose. And it's unique that they did it with such intention that it actually fit the narrative of the plot. It wasn't just some like random switch. But you know, it being a found footage film, and we you know, reviewed our fair share of those with, you know, Life of Belle, you know, Frogman, you know, everything else. It was very refreshing to basically this not just be a found footage creature film, but also a story of, you know, human horror. You know, what is more horrifying than a fellow man basically being evil? And this film definitely, you know, talks about that. So, like, you know, like Dave said, we don't want to give out too much. And, you know, of course, there is a supernatural element to this with the hag, you know, the myth, the legend, you know, whether or not she's in the film and whatnot. And sort of the whole point is that they're trying to hunt the hag. But, you know, it's one of the best things about this movie is, you know, like Dave said, is the real villains of this. And I don't feel bad for what happened to them. Are the men who basically, you know, trap the women. And it's very interesting that, they basically did like a subversion of expectations twice, right? They start you off and you kind of feel like, yeah, this is just going to be another found footage, you know, monster movie. They're going to find the hag and, you know, shit's going to go down. And then they, you know, flip it on you. They're like, oh, nope, never mind. There probably isn't any hag. It's just these creepy guys in the woods. And then they flip it on you again. They're like, actually, wait a second. Here's the hag. So it kind of gives you, you know, proverbial whiplash, because you do not know what to expect next. And the three protagonists, the women in this film, did such a fantastic job. All of them were so, so good in their roles. And, you know, and the guys did great, too. They were exactly what I expected from disgusting people. So, you know, they did a very good job of making me hate them. And it was just very good. It was just a very fun movie. It was, you know, I was able to sit there and like, I was like, wow, okay, yeah, this is really fun. You know, I'm really enjoying like what's going on. And then, you know, immediately you're like, oh God, now I'm disgusted. And then you're like, okay, never mind. I'm having fun again. It's just really good. It was very, very much like you said, I was not expecting the film that I was delivered. And I feel like that's always just such a good feeling, is that you start watching a movie and then you basically watch a completely different movie than what you worked up in your head. You know, as much as we try not to, we always go into films with sort of, you know, preconceived expectations and potentially even preconceived notions about like what's about to happen. So when we get something that we didn't expect to get, it's like, oh, this is fucking great. I love this, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what I would add to that. this great job overall. And obviously, I love it when directors and creators reach out to us and say, like, hey, watch my movie, because I always am very pleased and very happy to do so.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, because, you know, hell, it makes our job a little easier. We're not trying to, it's like, hey, what are we going to watch this episode? It's like, oh, well, this, you know, it came to us. Yeah. And, and, you know, and we've gotten several really good films that way that, you know, not saying we wouldn't have discovered them at some point, but maybe, you know, they're brought to our attention a little earlier than normal. And of course, then there's the whole, you know, Daniel Roebuck was great in it too, right? He only plays at the beginning and the end. Definitely, definitely, definitely cannot. There's no doubt in my mind, right? This is set up for a sequel. No doubt, right? The way it was left, it is there. It looks like the intent is there. I hope it gets made. And all I can say right now, I mean, I cannot believe that this movie is not on like a streaming service, right? Like on a Screenbox or something yet.
Yeah.
And I hope it gets picked up. You know, I know it's on video on demand, and I urge everybody to go and get it that route. I know it's, I believe it's on Vudu. I know it's on, I'm pretty sure it's on Amazon video on demand. And I urge people, you know, don't wait and hope, go on and rent it or buy it or whatever and watch it. It's worth it. But I just can't believe, you know, there's lots of great movies that are on there, and this would fit right in, man. This, you know, how much we've enjoyed Life of Bale and Frogman and this and that. And this movie's right there with him. It's just a fun, unique little movie. That's really, it's just a blast, man. I don't have any qualms with saying that we reviewed two movies that I very much more enjoyed watching Hunting for the Hag than The Exorcism. And, yeah. I mean, just no doubt about it. And Hunting for the Hag is a movie that I will watch again, right? Especially if there's, you know, if there is another one that comes along, it's one of those that I'll be excited to be like, oh yeah, okay, I'm going to rewatch the first one to gear up for that, you know, again, it was a cool movie. I know I stress it a lot. This movie nailed it with the character development. That's very important to me, right? Because if you lose that, things blur. And the movie, you have to be invested in characters. And, man, I was invested in these characters. Not only because it's like you're invested almost from the beginning with the hag thing that you think it's going. And then with this comes, then it's like you're even more invested. And, great job by Paul Brooks. And Sierra Renfro helped write it, right? Who she was in the movie. And again, I very much hope I hope we get a follow-up. I would be very, very pleased to see another movie. And again, thank you to Paul for reaching out and getting this. And I think we may have to hook up with Paul and do another interview a little bit down the road here in the near future, because.
Oh, yeah.
I think it'd be fun to talk to him and about this movie and, you know, and then we can pick his brain on what the prospects are for a sequel. So we'll see. Right. Maybe I'll put that out there and we'll see. But again, well done. Well done. Well done. I very much enjoyed this movie. Let's rate this sucker. Ike, I rated the last one first. So why don't you rate Hunting for the Hag out of 5 screams? What are you giving it?
I'm giving this bad boy a 3.5 screams out of 5. You know, we always say it, 3 is sort of like the middle of the road. And if you exceed that, if you go above and beyond, you know, 3.5 is sort of where you fall. Unless, you know, you take a step into the echelons of the superior, you know, in line with Skinamarink and Terrifier 2. Which, don't get me wrong, you know, Hunting for the Hag is fantastic in its own right. It was very much enjoyable. But it does not eclipse or match the energy of Terrifier 2 quite. So, I would have to give it a 3.5 out of 5, which is still a very strong score, for us at least.
Yeah, I'm in agreement. I'm giving it a 3.5 as well. Cause again, a 3 movie is right there. You know, we enjoyed it. But this, like I said, had a little bit of originality. Cause going into the movie, you really think, I know what's going to happen in this movie, right? I don't know how they're going to get there per se. Or will they put a twist on what's happening here? But this is just a creature type movie, right? I get it. That's what they're doing. And, no, not so much. So they really threw a curveball and I liked it, right? I liked that it wasn't exactly what I thought. and well done. So very, very fun. I highly suggest everybody go give it a watch. It like I said, it's worth the purchase or the rent on video on demand. Well worth it. So, all right. As we mentioned earlier, next episode, we're going to review A Quiet Place Day One, which is a prequel to A Quiet Place. It's releasing in theaters on June 28th. We will have our review next episode for that. We'd like to give a special thank you to our listeners, our followers, and to our wives, Monica and Kayla. They were on last episode with the Wives Rebuttal. And once again, social media reached out and said, oh yeah, love it when the wives are on. And I'm like, man, they're just encouraging Monica. And I mean, one guy on social media, I literally had to go and create a list of all the episodes that the wives were on so that he knew. And I'm all like, you know, you could just listen to them all, but no, fine. Here's what the wives are on. No, I kid. It's always good when they're on. It's always good to have a lively discussion. You know, we might get a little fired up. We might get a little boisterous, but it's all in good fun. No ill will, no harm. We enjoy a lively discussion, on this stuff. That's why we're all very passionate about movies. And, so it's fun to have those discussions. So they'll be on again in the future at some point, and the Wives fan club can, you know, whatever, sing their praises again, I guess. So, all right. Before we close this out, Ike, anything else you want to throw out?
You know, if you liked our rambling today, we did a lot of it. A lot of rabbit holes, man. Other than that, just make sure you check out our interviews. I'm really digging the interviews, so check them out, because, you know, if you guys like them a lot, then we'll do more. There's plenty of people I'd talk to, and, but there's not as many people willing to talk to us, I don't think.
I don't know, maybe. But, they're fun, right? They're little bonus episodes we're due. Something different we get to do. And it's, again, same kind of thing, right? It's just typically, if it's us two and the creator, it's what you have is three guys that love horror and talking about one guy, what he did for horror, in horror. And it's, you know, it's usually pretty fun, pretty informal. We find out lots of facts and information, but it's, you know, like we said, we're, you know, a podcast. It feels like you're chatting with friends, and these creators, we treat them like a friend. And, you know, it's always a fun chat, when we talk to these guys, and there'll be more of them in the future. You know, if you're a creator and would, you know, think you'd fit the bill to be talked to, reach out to us. If you're one of our listeners who have someone in mind, please let us know. Yes, we know. We'd all love to interview, you know, John Carpenter and everything else, but the likelihood of us getting to do that now is not very likely. So, you know, put in a recommendation, try to make it reasonable, something that we can attain. Not that I won't shoot for the stars, but, you know, sometimes you have to be realistic in those expectations. So anyway, we'll be back next episode to review A Quiet Place Day One. Make sure you follow us on social media. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Just do it right now. Whatever you're listening to on, hit that subscribe so that you don't ever miss an episode. And until next week, wherever you go, wherever you do, be good, be safe, and have many pleasant nightmares.